Good morning, everyone. Today's daf, Nun Vav in Bechoros. We're back on Nun Hey. We're right in the middle, right in the bottom of Nun Hey Amud Aleph, and lessons in geography. The Gemara is giving us a geographical lesson simply because the mission yesterday brought down the opinion of Reb Meir. Reb Meir says the Yarden is mafsik l'maisa behema. So that means that if I have animals on one side of the Jordan and animals on the other side of the Jordan, they do not combine. If I have five animals on one side of the Jordan and five animals on the other side of the Jordan. So I don't have to count them for Maisa Behema, even though I have a total of 10 animals, but the Yarden is mafsik. But the Jordan River separates the two, segregates the two, and therefore I just simply view it as five and five, not a collection of 10. Why should that be? So the Gemara yesterday brought down two opinions. First, the Gemara brought down the opinion of Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Ami says it's an issue on access. In other words, because the animals on each side of the Jordan River do not have access to one another, I can't simply just transport the animals from side A to side B, so therefore they don't combine. That's the opinion of Rabbi Ami. The Gemara ends up asking the obvious question, so why the Jordan River? Why not mention this halacha by any river whatsoever? And the Gemara says, Kasha. Okay, that's a good question. And the Gemara says, I don't have an answer. And then the Gemara brings in a second opinion of Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba in the name of Yochanan. And it has nothing to do with access. It has nothing to do with animals getting from point A to point B. It happens to be that Jordan is a boundary. It's a boundary between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Aretz, and a boundary creates a legal division between animals on one side and animals on the other side. It has nothing to do with access. It has everything to do with legal boundaries. Even though Eretz Yisrael itself is subdivided between Shvatim, and even though that's true, that is a legal boundary, but that's not the... Israel's a unified nation. Like, you write... I don't even know, right? Like United States of America, meaning different states, but we're all part of one big government.
And
well, I mean, different laws in different states, but I'm saying, but it's unified. So in Eretz Yisrael, right? It's, I don't know if you like the analogy, but in Eretz Yisrael, same thing, meaning it's divided amongst the Shvatim, and then but never that's unified. But when you're talking about the Jordan River which separates Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Aretz. So that's already now two distinct areas. And so therefore, if we have animals on one side of the Jordan and one animals on the other side of the Jordan, that will be mafsik, that will separate the two. And that's the pshat. And it's a better pshat in the Mishnah, being that the Mishnah only refers to the Jordan River, not to any other river. Okay.
That northern southern border,
yeah, right. The Jordan River, I guess, just creates... It's a good question.
That's
a good question. I guess it just creates such a natural border... Like, you simply know when you're on one side versus when you're on the other side. On top of that, the Gemara also notes that whether the Jordan River itself is actual part of Eretz Yisrael or not, that's subject to a machlokas tanaim. We went through that very quickly yesterday. That was also part of yesterday's daf as well. Then the Gemara tried to isolate which part of the Jordan River are we talking about, meaning which part of the Jordan River actually has the status of the Jordan River. So that was the discussion that we had yesterday in the Gemara. And why is it called the Jordan River? Because it comes from Dan. It comes from the tribal section of Dan. It was Yored Midan. It comes down from Dan. Okay. And then the Gemara went on to discuss other bodies of water and other sources of things. The source of all water in the world, the Gemara said yesterday, the Euphrates River, right? The Nahr Pras. The source of all blood in a human being, Kaved, the liver of the human being. Okay. So these are the things that we went over yesterday. We're now in the very bottom of the Amud, Nun Hey Amud Aleph, in the very, very bottom. The Gemara says that water in the world all comes from the Euphrates. Okay? Right to Rav Kolner. Very bottom of the page. V'gimel naharos lamatami pras. The Gemara says, now is that true? We can now turn the page. Nun Hey Amud Beis. V'aika einasa de mid... The Midlayain, so the Gemara says, but you have wellsprings. And the wellsprings of the Euphrates were actually higher than the Euphrates itself. Take a look at that first Rashi in the Amud. Einasa de Midlayain, Einos Amaim Hanovos Baharim Ramim. They're up in high mountains. Vahanu Havi Gavoim Mipras. And they're higher than the Euphrates. Vahecha Asu Mipras. So look, you don't have to know a whole lot, but you just simply have to know elevations. Meaning if you have a water source that's higher than another one, so you can't say that the lower water source is a source for a higher elevation water source. That doesn't make any sense. So you have these water sources in the mountains, water running through the mountains, and the Gemara says, how can you say that the Euphrates is supplying these water sources? And the Gemara says, no, you could say it. Amar of Misharshi, Hanu, Sume de Prasninhu. Gemara has a great expression. They're like the ladders of the Euphrates. Ladders of the Euphrates, Rashi, Mekach and Tachas Akarka, Va'olim Baharim, Kamo Sulam. Basically, yeah. In other words, it must be that the Euphrates River has not just a lot of water, but a lot of pressure. And that pressure is able to have the water go up and elevate to a higher place. So yes, even the mountains that are next to the Euphrates, and even though the water sources over there are a little bit higher, it all comes from the Euphrates. V'haksiv v'hanar ha-revihu pras, the Gemara says, but wait one moment. The Torah, when describing the four rivers, right? The Euphrates you find in Bereishis. Second paragraph of Bereishis, there are four rivers, and the Euphrates is only number four. Right, there's the Chidekel and the Tigrat and the fourth, which I don't know offhand. But in other words, there are four in total. But the Nahar Pras is number four. V'aksiv Nahar Revi who Pras Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak V'Itamar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov who Pras Demi Ikara. Okay, really. All right, I'll do it without a chumash, even though it's better with a chumash. If you look carefully at the psukim, it's better with a chumash. What do I do now? Commercial break.
You want to? They mounted with snow and the snow melts, and that doesn't come from you,
Again, you're going to see in just a moment. The Gemara is going to say that the water in Eretz. Thank you so much. The water in Eretz Yisrael comes from the Euphrates. So, I'm not saying I do, but okay. But let's just look at the Pesukim. The Pesukim really, when you read the Pesukim, the Pesukim really spelled this out. Okay, Reisim Shemasa Adam. Okay. All right, here we go. Vishemanar Sheni, no, I'm going to go back up one. The Nar Yotse, here we go, we'll start in Pesuk Yud. Vinar Yotze Me Aden, and there's a river. Meaning, the first thing the Torah describes is a river, or I should say better, the river. Meaning, Vinar Yotze Me Aden, there's this river that comes out of Aden, Lashkosa Sagan, and waters the whole garden, Omishami Parade, and there it divides. Vahayala Arbe Rishim, and it comes out to four heads. Shem Achad Pishon, who else have Eviskalarza Chavila, Asher Shamazahav. So the first river is the river Pishon, which goes out and it surrounds the entire nation, country of Chavilah. That's where you're going to find. Yeah, that's where you're going to find the gold. Tov and other precious stones. V'shem Hanara Sheni Gichon. Second river is the Gichon. Who is the called Arts Kush, and that's going to go out through the entire land of Kush. Let's call it Ethiopia, although that's just a good guess on my part. V'shem Hanara Shlishi Chidekel, and the third river is the Chidekel, which we normally translate as the Tigris. Hu Alech Kidmas Ashur V'Hanar HaRevi Hu Pras. Now, if you read that last phrase carefully, I didn't. I just kind of ran over it. V'Hanar HaRevi Hu Pras, and the fourth river is Pras. It doesn't say it like it said the first three. Right? To review. It says, Shem HaEchad, the name of the first river is Pishon. Shem HaNar Sheni, the name of the second river is Gichon. Shem Hanar Shlishi, the name of the third river is the Chidekel, and then Venar Revi Upras, and the fourth one is the Euphrates. It doesn't say Shem Hanar HaRevi, the name of the fourth one, because when the Torah here refers to the Euphrates, that's going back to Pasuk Yud. That's the original river. The Euphrates is the river. It happens now that there are three branches, and we'll call the continuation of the Euphrates, the quote unquote, the fourth branch. But the truth be told is that Euphrates is the same river mentioned back in Pasuk Yud. So it is, Euphrates is the source of all water. V'anar Revi Upras. I'm sorry, Upras Mikara. Tanya Rabbi Meir Omer, Yuval Shemosh, and Emra Vayech, Ke'ech Shasul, Amayim, Va'al Yuval Yishlach Sherashav. The real name of the river is called the Yuval River. Okay? And they have a Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, which sounds just like the Pasuk in the beginning of Tehillim. I was going to really say Palge Mayim, but that's okay. But this is not Tehillim. This is Yirmiyahu. So it's like a tree branching off of the water. Ve'al Yuval Yishlach Sharashav, and it sends its roots to the Yuval. That's a code for Euphrates. So the real name of the Euphrates is really Yuval. So now, why is it called Pras? You know how nicknames work. It's the nickname because there's something about that word that describes the Euphrates River. V'lamani kreshmo pras, shemema parim v'rabim, because the word pras comes from like peru or vu, the waters are fruitful and multiply, meaning it is the source for all other rivers. Okay, mi misayel l'shmuel, the amr shmuel nahara mikipa mibrech. The river really comes mikipe. Kipe, it's like a cornerstone. It means it comes from itself. The waters are not outsourced from any other flowing body source, but really you have a nahar, you have a river, it really grows on its own. Okay. Upligidarav, Damaravami Amarav, Mishra Bamarav, Sahadarabha Pras. This disagrees with Rav. Rav says no. You see a strong river. You see a high river. That's because of the rainwater. In fact, Rav says that when it's raining in Eretz Yisrael, how do we know it? Because Sahad Rabba Pras. Because a good testimony for that would be the Euphrates River. Meaning the growth of the Euphrates River is a siman, it's a sign that it's raining out in Eretz Yisrael. It sounds like... right, and you see, take a look at Tosfos. Just look at the beginning of Tosfos. Sounds like that Euphrates River is flowing from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. That's certainly what Rav is saying. Meaning, when it's raining out in Eretz Yisrael, you'll see it out here in Babylonia. You'll see it with the Euphrates River because the Euphrates River is going to grow higher. Okay, again, I'm not the person to explain the geography. Right, that's not my job. I'm not sure what is my job, but okay, I'll let people who know more about geography, you know, let them try to work out how exactly that works. Okay, but here we go now. Now we're going to take all this water works, all the water information that we just learned, and now we're going to translate it into halacha. Okay, so what are we arguing about right now? Listen carefully. We're basically arguing, when you have a river, the flow of the river, is that an internally sourced flow, or is that coming from rainwater? Okay? And it will make a big difference halachically. So our positions are, so far, let's go over them. First, we have the opinion of Shmuel. Shmuel says that everything's internal. When you have a river that flows, even the river increases, the increase is internal. Water sources, springs, it's an internal flow, and it's an internal growth. And so therefore, according to Shmuel, rain never really affects the body of water. And then you have the opinion of Rav, and Rav totally disagrees with Shmuel. Rav says no, that when you have a river, and the river starts now growing, and you have a swell of a river, that's because of rain. Okay? Those are your two basic opinions in the Gemara right now. And the Gemara says, and this translates into halacha lamasa, practical halacha. How so? Avu de Shmuel avelu labanase mikva biyomi nisan, the father of Shmuel. Now, I'll tell you right away, the father of Shmuel is not going to agree with his son. Okay? And it won't be the first time. And why we don't know his name is one of those mysteries. I don't know. But Avua de Shmuel, but the father of Shmuel, so for his daughters, so in the months of Nisan, Nisan is the spring. Nisan is right after the rainy season. So in other words, there's a lot of rain. That means that swell of the river is due to the rainwater and not to the internal flow of the water. So mikveh biyomi nisan. So what he would do is for his daughters, he would actually build them a mikveh. Meaning, he would not let his daughters tovel in the river. But what he would do with his daughters is he basically made a little hole in the ground, allowed the rainwater to collect in the hole in the ground, and he would have them tovel in a mikveh, and he would not let them go to the rivers in the month of Nisan. Okay, why not? So here's where it gets a little bit tricky. So there's a Rashi right here in our daf. If I may, I think I'm going to bypass the Rashi right here in our daf, and I'll go to Rashi and Shabbos. In fact, you'll see, he quotes also Rashi and Shabbos as well. Rashi and Shabbos, daf Samechei. I'll tell you what, it's more universally accepted, so to say. Rashi and Shabbos says like this. There is a big difference between rainwater and natural spring water. The difference is that when it comes to natural spring water, it works as a mikvah, whether it's stationary or whether it's flowing. It doesn't matter. If it's a natural spring water, you can tovel in such a body of water and it could be stationary, it could be moving. When it's rainwater by definition has to be stationary. Mikveh mayim means it's a collection of water. So if it's rainwater, the only way it's metaher is only if it's stationary. So Avuah d'Shmuel, now here's his consideration, here's his thinking, that when you have, when the river is swelling in the springtime, that's because most of that river is rainwater. And obviously it's a moving body of water. So the father of Shmuel says, I can't have my daughter's tovel in here because it's fundamentally rainwater. It's moving. That's no good. In the months of Tishrei, right after the summer, so no rain over the course of the summer. So now, what is this water right now? It's spring water. It's not rainwater. So by spring water, it doesn't matter if it's moving or it's stationary. So he told his daughters, go ahead, it's okay, you can go tovel in the river, that's fine. You don't have to tovel in the mikvah. Okay? That's Rashi in Shabbos, Daf Samechei. Right? Take a look over there. That's his explanation. There's another part over here that also requires explanation. In the month of Tishrei, he would make mats. Why would he make mats for them in the month of Tishrei? Meaning they would go into the river. So Rashi quotes that he would do that so that when the daughters stepped in the riverbed, their feet wouldn't get dirty. Okay? Now, it wasn't just an aesthetic issue, it was a halachic issue. Because what's going to happen now is their feet are going to get now wrapped in mud, and the mud will be a chatzitza. So what he did is he made like mats for them to step on, so that when they toveled in the river, they could step on the mats themselves, and that way the mud wouldn't be a chatzitza between their body and the water. That's pshat number one. There's a second pshat as well. Rabbeinu Tam, it's found in Tosfos right over here. Rabbeinu Tam says that they would make mats mishum tznius, because of privacy, meaning not mats on the ground, mats around, so that when they tovel in the river, they would be private, and there would be tznius. Right, Rabbeinu Tam writes, I'm just reading a little excerpt of Tosfos. Uporsluhu mafatsim shalo yiru osam kedei shalo temerena letvom imne haboshes velo tavlu shapir. Meaning, and it's interesting, Rabbeinu Tam says, why do I want tznius? It's funny, I would have just simply said, you want tznius because you want tznius. Rabbeinu Tam says, no, it's more than that. You want tznius because if it was an exposed area, so they would just quickly jump in and jump out, and it wouldn't be a good tefillah because they wouldn't have the calm and the tranquility of doing a proper tefillah. But says Rabbeinu Tam, if you put mats around them and now it's private, so they'll take their time and they're going to tovel in the mikvah diligently and carefully. Okay, interesting.
Well, at that time of year when they were able to rely on the river, that river was considered a Mayan type of...
Yeah, right. You see, right. In other words, you notice, by the way, I avoided the whole Zav and Zava. Right, correct. I avoided that because that's Rashi over here, and it is complicated because you look Rashi in Shabbos, Rashi quotes that pshat, and Rashi says it's not a correct pshat. It's interesting, though, because Rashi over here says it without batting an eyelash, but okay. No, so you're right. So that's Avuah d'Shmuel. Now, does all that translate to Shmuel? None of it translates to Shmuel. Because according to Shmuel, in other words, you understand he's now disagreeing with his father. Shmuel's of the opinion that when you see the river swelling, that's nothing to do with rain. That has to do with the internal body of the water. The water creates its own water supply even when it swells. It has nothing to do with rain. Leave the rain out of the discussion. So according to Shmuel himself, you now will have a scenario where you can always tovel in the river. It doesn't matter. Tishrei, Nisan, summer, winter, spring, end of summer, end of spring, it doesn't matter. You can always tovel in the river. So you see that the father of Shmuel is obviously going to disagree with Shmuel. Mikveh b'yom nisan savala, I'm sorry, savala karav. The Gemara, I'm just now back in the Gemara, continuing in the Gemara. Obviously the father of Shmuel follows like Rav. And when it's raining in Eretz Yisrael, how do you know that? Because you'll see the Euphrates River growing. Because the Euphrates River growing is due to the fact of the rain. And that means then that there'll be more rainwater than there will be natural spring water. And more rainwater means it can't be moving. It's got to be stationary. And that's why it's not going to be good. Tishrei, and then the Gemara just simply reviews that he also made mats for his daughters in the month of Tishrei. Okay. Upligi didei adidei. If the Gemara was not complicated enough as it is, the Gemara then points out Shmuel's inconsistent. Shmuel is inconsistent with himself. Upligi didei adidei. Da'amar Shmuel, enamayim nitarim bezochlin, elapras biyom Tishrei. You want flowing water that's going to be metahir, you have to go into the Euphrates, and you have to go Tishrei, end of the summer. End of the summer, Euphrates is the only time that the flowing river is going to work. Why? Because there's no rainwater. The flowing water is only natural spring water, and natural spring water can be in motion. But if you go to Nisan, right, you go to the spring right after the rainy season, and now all that flowing water is going to be rainwater, you can't tovel on the river then. That's Shmuel saying that. So who's Shmuel arguing with? Correct. Shmuel is arguing with Shmuel. Okay? And it's an awkward ending to a sugya. It's not neat. It's not, Gemara doesn't tidy it up. Gemara just simply says, look, so now you want to line up your shitas, you have the father of Shmuel, you have Rav, and you have a final statement of Shmuel. All of them say that the swell of a river is because of the rain. And that means that you can't tovel in a river during the rainy season or right after the rainy season. Okay? And then you have one opinion of Shmuel, okay, which is awkward because he's arguing with Shmuel. You have one opinion of Shmuel that says that no, that the swell of the river is internally driven, it's internally based, and so therefore rain never affects the status of a river, and therefore you could tovel in the river. Okay? Halacha? So the Rama says you shouldn't tovel in the river. Okay, Rama says if you have no choice in the matter, so then the river becomes an option. But the Rama says really a person shouldn't use a river as a mikvah.
If you have a pit,
right? If you have a pit, exactly what Avu Shmuel did. If you have a pit and then the water collects over there, that's fine.
What if you go into a pit and the water overflows? I mean, from the pit outside, is that considered
connected to the river?
It's connected to the river, but if it's a stationary body of water, so then it would seem to be fine. But again, I'm not proficient in mikvahs. So, but I'm just...
An ocean, right?
An ocean, stationary body of water. An ocean is, you know, I know the waves, but I'm saying, but a river is a constant moving body of water. It's interesting. The Gemara says that you assume that the majority of it is rainwater, right? The Gemara's lashon is meg shamim ruba. It's a spring, right?
If it's flowing,
right? But a spring, but a natural spring, though, even when it's flowing, it's fine. It's a river, which is going to be an issue because the river is exposed to the rain, and the rain's coming down. And okay.
And this cross here is locked up.
Yeah. In other words, right? This whole discussion that we're having—it's another good point. The whole discussion we're having is not necessarily Euphrates oriented, meaning it's just using the Euphrates because that's, you know, that was right by the city of Narda. So that's Shmuel, Avuda Shmuel. Okay. We start the new Mishnah next sugya coming up. Okay.
Was it accepted that if its water is from Israel or no?
I mean, that's the way the Gemara sounds like, and the type quoted Tosa says that's correct. But again, you gotta know your map well to understand this. I don't know the one map well enough to really.
Mississippi comes from.
Okay. Yeah. Right. No. I understand. They say
that,
right. They say the world. They mean
that word.
Right. Maybe underground channels. Halokeach oshenitan lo b'matana patam remaisa behema. Okay. The Mishnah here gives us a very basic exemption when it comes to the mitzvah of maisa behema. Again, the mitzvah is you take your animals that are born over your flock over the course of the year, you put them in a pen, and then you let them go and you count them. But here's what you don't count towards one of your ten any purchased animal. So you purchase an animal, meaning, so it's interesting. This animal, when originally owned by the seller, is obligated in the mitzvah of Maisa Behema. But once he sells it, the sale now relieves this animal, exempts this animal from needing to be counted with other animals. So now the buyer, it's great. Buyer now goes ahead and is exempt from the mitzvah of Maisa Behema.
It's a penalty for the seller.
There's no penalty. In other words, it's a legitimate legal loophole. Well, this is Maestro Behema. This is Maestro Behema. That's not going to be true by Bechor. Or, Yeah, it's a legitimate loophole.
How did he get them originally then?
What do you mean?
How did he get that? Somebody had to buy them originally.
No, in other words, when you buy the animal that you bought now is exempt. When the animal has children, that animal is yours.
I'm saying, but let's say they buy it.
No, in other words, animals.
I'm so
confused. In other words, he started a herd because he had animals. The animals were born in his flock.
How did he have his animals?
Okay, you're right. The original animals were purchased, but once the animal's born, though, now it's your animal. Animal born in your flock, that's yours. The mother's exempt, but the animal that's born is now not exempt. But when you take that animal that's born in your flock and then you sell it, now that's going to be an exemption. Plus, as a Mishnah, Matana. If you give it as a gift, that's also going to be an exemption. So in other words, a gifted animal is not obligated in the mitzvah of Maisa Behema, and you don't count them. So the Gemara now wants to know, simple question, where does this come from? Again, I've told you many times, the Mishnah is machine gun, meaning the Mishnah just rattles off halacha. No derivation, no drushas, nothing. Mishnah just simply says things. And then the Gemara is there for explanation. Manahani mili, I'm a Rav Kahana, I'm a Kra, b'chor banecha titen li, kein tasel ashorcha, litzoncha, period. Okay? Pasuk in Parashas Mishpatim, that deals with the mitzvah of b'chor. Now, the Gemara is going to turn around in just a moment and say, we're not talking about b'chor, we're talking about Maisa Behema, right? Maisa Behema, Parashas Bechukosai, end of Bechukosai. What's happening over here? But before we figure out what's happening over here, let's go through the pasuk. Bechor banecha titen li, you're going to give me your bechor, the firstborns of your son, and you know what you're going to do. Also, kein tasel ashorcha letzonecha. And also, when you have firstborn cattle, firstborn sheep, and firstborn goat, they're also going to go to me as well. Go to me, of course, means give it to a kohen. Okay, ma banecha in. Now, can you buy a firstborn animal? I'm not phrasing the question well, and I'm listening to myself right now. I realize it's the question's not coming out well. Is it possible for a bechor to come out of your animal and that be a purchased animal? Of course not. Meaning the only way the bechor comes to you is because you own the mother. And the animal now is yours. The moment it's born, it's yours. There's no purchasing of a bechor. The way the bechor is generated is you own the mother, and now the animal that comes out, the firstborn animal that comes out, firstborn male animal that comes out, is yours. The word sale over there is totally irrelevant. So ma banecha ein blakuch matana, avtzon chavakarcha ein blakuch matana. And certainly we can say the same thing is true by your sons. Meaning you can't buy yourself a firstborn son. It's not shayach. It's just simply not applicable. So when it comes to Bechor, sales are just simply not applicable. Gifts are not applicable. You have your firstborn son. Okay? Now, of course, all this is really good, but not helpful. Because we're not talking about Bechor. We're talking about Maisa Behema. It's a different set of halachas. So the Gemara now goes on to explain. Okay, the pasuk here is talking about bechor. Amakra kain ta'ase. The pasuk says kain ta'ase, meaning there's an asiya element. So the Gemara says, look, I can't take this pasuk and apply it to bechor. What asiya is there by bechor? Is there an action point by bechor? It's automatic. Firstborn comes out of the mother. It's automatically a bechor. Done, and done. Okay? So there's no asiya element. So what the Torah is doing, this is the classic imeno inyan. So we know that the drasha that we're wanting to make, it can't be applied to bechor. So therefore, we're going to have to apply it to another area of halacha. What's the other area of halacha? Maiser behema. The Gemara is going to now suggest, well, can't you apply to some other area? So the Gemara says, why can't we apply to the halacha of chatos on asham? Well, no, because chatos on asham is coming as a response to a sin. Your bechor is not coming as a response to a sin. Your bechor is simply because your animal had a firstborn. Sorry. Ulishlamim. Right? Can't be talking about Olan and Shlamin, because Olan and Shlamin can come through a neder or nedava, meaning you can donate, you can obligate yourself to bring a carbon Ola or bring a carbon Shlamin. Does that work by Bechor? No. There's no neder, there's no nedava. Bechor simply, it had a firstborn animal, congratulations, you now have a carbon. It's automatic. So the Gemara says, Olas Re'iya. Now, Olas Re'iya is not Neder Nedava. Olas Re'iya, you go up to Yerushalayim during the Shalosh Regalim, and you got to bring a Karban Ola. Not Neder, not Nedava, you just got to bring it. But the Gemara says, again, that's not a good comparison. Look, when it comes to your firstborn son, and when it comes to your firstborn animal son, there's no Kviyas Man. It's not any time. It happens when it happens. It's that simple. So that's why the comparison to Olas Re'iya is not a good comparison, because Olas Re'iya is on the clock. You're on the calendar. So the Gemara says, well, let me ask you this though. You know, with your son, is there ever an opportunity to buy your firstborn son? No, never. It's not Shaykh to ever say, I'm going to purchase my firstborn son. Doesn't work that way. So it must be then that we have to look to another area in halacha where there's never an opportunity for purchasing. So the Gemara says, but alama amar Rabbi Asi amar Rabbi Yochanan laka chasara ubrim b'mei iman kula nechnasan ledir le'isaser. When it comes to Meiser Behema, there is an option to purchase Meiser Behema. How? Let's say I buy fetuses. Okay? I buy fetuses. Now, in general, that always gets to a sticky area of halacha, right? Yeah, in other words, it's a davar shelo ba'olam. But if we discussed this earlier in Bechor, we discussed this almost the first day of Bechor. It's possible. There's a way. There's a way to purchase fetuses. Okay? True. Even before that. It's doable. Okay? Agavimo, you buy it together with the mother. No, but it sounds like from the Gemara, you're just buying the fetuses. It doesn't matter. I'm telling you, from day one of Becharos, we talked that there's a way. There's a way to do it. Remember Tosfos all the way back on Daf. It was like Daf Gimel, I think. Huh? Yeah, correct. It's doable. So, b'mei iman kula nechnasan l'dil le'sasir. Now, here's the halacha. I buy 10 fetuses. They're all going to be subject to the halacha of Meiser Behema. Okay, good. So, not good, because now we're looking for an analogy, and the analogy is not exact. When it comes to your firstborn son, is there ever an option of buying? Never.
Well, you make a Kenyan and
Isha. Okay. True, but yeah. In other words, there's simply no option of buying. But when it comes to Meiser Behema, so using the halacha of Rav Yochanan, I'm now just provided you an option of buying your Meiser Behema. So the analogy is not perfect.
But that's a
Devar Shalom Olamot. Okay. I'm a Rav, I'm a Krat Tasa, B'shasa Siyah, Miyad. So basically Rav says, yeah, you're right, but we're not going to include that case. Because it's only B'shas Asiyah, Miyad HaKasov. That's a time of Asiyah, meaning the only time we're talking about is a time where I can in fact count it towards Meiser Behema. While the animal's in utero, you can't count that towards Meiser Behema. You're not at the point of Asiyah yet. So just that, even though you're right, but that stays out of the discussion. Okay. We brought this halacha of Rav Yochanan. The Gemara would like to dwell on this halacha for a little bit. Gufa. Am Rabbi Asi, Am Rav Yochanan, Laka Chasar Ubram, B'me'iman Kula Nechnasan L'dir Le'isasir. Okay? So we have a halacha, an interesting halacha. I buy 10 fetuses. So when those fetuses come into the world, even though they were purchased, nevertheless, they're subject to the halacha of Meiser Behema. And I count those animals towards Meiser Behema, 1 through 10. 10th one now is going to be Meiser Behema.
Even when you purchase them, there was no kinyan.
So I'm gonna say there is. Now, how do I say that so confidently? I'll go back. All the way back. Yep. Correct.
He had that with the non-Jew where you can sell it, you know, like before the...
Yeah, the Tosfos is all the way back on Gimel Amud Beis, right? He says, Dekala Perosav. What you could do is you could buy a tree for its fruit, meaning you're allowed to buy, in other words, as long as you have something here and it's going to generate a future, you can point to the object that's currently here and say, I want to purchase its generated future. It's what's called Degol Leperosav. And Tosfos says you can do the same thing with an animal as well. You can purchase an animal for its Uber. Okay, in other words, again, it is doable. It is doable. If I just simply say I'm buying your fetus, that by itself doesn't work. It has to be done in a very legal way. In the meantime, however, so the Gemara says, okay, now, what we're going to do now in the Gemara is basically go over what we just went over before. The Gemara is just going to give us a slightly different format, but basically question and answer is going to be the same. What about our Mishnah? What do you mean? I buy fetuses, and once the fetuses come into the world, they're obligated in Maisa Behema, and I got to count. The Gemara says, what about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says that once you purchase, that creates a legal exemption from Maisa Behema. I'm Rav Elazar. So Rav Elazar says, I know I'm going to give you the right answer. Rav Elazar says, how do I know I'm going to give you the right answer? Because last night I went to bed, and who did I see in a dream? I saw Rav Yochanan. Now, Rav Elazar was a student of Rav Yochanan, so maybe. Or could be he was alive also. I don't know. Rav Yochanan chazai b'choma. Rav Yochanan appeared to me in a dream. Sounds like it's after he died. Milsa ma'alya amina. And because Rav Yochanan appeared to me in a dream, so now I woke up this morning, I felt good. Yeah, anyone ever have that happen? You wake up in the morning, feel good? Okay. So Amakra Tasa. So he says, I'll go back to that pasuk in Mishpatim. The pasuk says Tasa Vishasa Siya Miyata Kasov. Yeah, when is there this legal loophole that when you buy an animal it's gonna be exempt from Maisa Behema? That's only Vishasa Siya, that's only when there's an action point. The right action point is when you could actually count. If I'm buying an Ubar, there's no action point. There's nothing to count. The animal's not even here yet. Good. Okay, same give and take that we just saw earlier. So the Gemara now questions Rav Elazar based on a brisa. Halaku chal al mechusar zman. Right. Great, great issue. What if I buy an animal before it reaches its eighth day of life? Did you know that you cannot offer an animal as a karban until it's 8 days old? Pasuk and Chumash. Right? We lay in it every antif. Right? 7 days tachas imo, v'yam ha-shmina v'hala, yei ratzeh. An animal is only eligible to be brought as a karban only from the 8th day and onward. Okay? I buy an animal now, days 1 through 7. Okay. Should there be an exemption of Maisa Behema? Think good about this one. Think well about this.
Yeah, no.
It should be like a fetus. Because we said that the exemption is only when there's an action point. Days 1 through 7, there's no action point. I can't offer it as a karban. Had this been lucky number 10, I wouldn't be able to offer it as a karban. So it should halachically be just like a fetus. And meanwhile, the Braisa says, halakuach, chal al mechusar zman. The exemption of lakuach applies even days 1 through 7. So that's a good question. We're now looking at Rav Elazar. Rav Elazar, how are you going to handle that? Didn't you say it's all about asiya?
Does this apply to the last days of life only because we count from Elul or no?
Does it
have to be 8?
You don't have to wait till the end to count. You can count even earlier. The point is that
the animal has to be 8 days old when you start counting.
Good. And so let's say now I bought an animal at day 5. Is there now going to be an exemption of lakuach? So based on what Rav Elazar says, the answer should be no, there's no exemption. Because it's not a shas asiya. It's not a time of action. The animal cannot be brought. So the first response, Amar Lezu in a Mishnah. Only Rav Elazar can say this. We don't have the right to say this. Rav Elazar's first reaction is not a brisa. Ezu eino mishnah, meaning this is not authoritative. I don't know what you're quoting me. What you're quoting me is not, simply not an authoritative brisa, and so therefore I don't flinch. Okay. And in fact, right, based on what I said earlier, it's right. It's a fetus, right? You purchase an animal days 1 through 7. It's no different than purchasing a fetus, right? Imtim salomar mishnah, but then he flinches. And even if you want to tell me that this is in fact a mishnah, and I'll grant you that this brisa is out there, but I will relegate it. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda hi, Mishum Rabbi Shimon, the Amar Mechus Hazman, Nechnas Ladir Lehisaser. There is an opinion that says that even in the animals Mechus Hazman, it will go in the pen, it will be counted with the others. That discussion is coming up tomorrow, I think. Good. So there is one opinion out there like that. We'll discuss more about that tomorrow. In the meantime, yeah, fine. So I'll give it to you. But that's Rabbi Shimon's opinion. We don't pass like Rabbi Shimon. So in other words, fine. I'll even let you have your brisa. But the brisa is going like Rabbi Shimon. V'arehu kebechor, ma bechor kadosh lefnei zmano, v'krav la'achar zmano. Av mechus v'zman kadosh lefnei zmano, v'krav la'achar zmano. It shouldn't it be just like the Bechor? Bechor, when does it become sanctified? The moment it comes out of its mother. Can you offer it as a carbon? No, you have to wait till day 8. So, Krav la'achar zmano, af mechus zman, kadosh lefnei zmano, v'krav la'achar zmano. It could be sanctified mechus zman, even before day 8, even though it's going to be nikra of achar zmano. Okay, good. And that would be, that's the thought process behind Rabbi Shimon. Tani Tana Kame de Rav. The following brisa was taught in front of Rav. This is going to be exciting. Listen to this. Ezuhu esnan shenichnas ledir lehisaser. Strange, I don't know what to call it. It's a prohibition, it's a psul. Okay. The Torah says, here's one of the animals you cannot offer as a carbon. Esnan zona. Person hires a zona. For services rendered, she receives an animal, okay, instead of cash, instead of a credit card. So she receives an animal, carbon. Not a carbon, I'm sorry. Let's just say an animal. Animal. Now, the zona, okay, she has perhaps not the most prestigious line of work, but as she wants to bring a carbon. Okay, so why not? So the, I've seen stranger things. So she wants to bring a carbon, fine. Here's the problem. The Torah says that anything that was used as an exchange for her services rendered now has the status of esnan zona. And therefore, that animal now becomes disqualified as a karban. Okay. Now, the brisa over here that's being quoted in front of Rav deals with the following. Let's say she received esnan zona, and then she sells it back. She sells it back to somebody. Huh? Okay, I know. So, Ezu esnan shenichnas adir leisaser, kol shenasnu la, v'chazer v'lakcho heimenu. So what happened was that she was given an animal for services rendered, and then, chazer v'lakcho heimenu, and then you buy it back from her. Okay? Perhaps she didn't want the animal. Perhaps she just wants the value for the animal. She sells it to you. The animal's hers. Now she sells it. And that is the brisa. Now, the first question we're going to deal with is Ben's question. I understand. You bought it back from her. That's lakuach. Didn't we just say, didn't our whole discussion start with, that's a bona fide, legitimate exemption? Okay. Vaha if sole belokeach. It's a funny lashon of the Gemara. It becomes disqualified through lakuach. I don't know what this... In other words, it should be... The Gemara's lashon should be more like it's pater from lakuach. Okay. Anyway, ishtamita dehadam ravasi am rav yochan lakachasar ubrin b'mei iman kula nechrasan ledir lehisaser. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you forgot Rav Yochanan's halacha. The halacha that we quoted twice already today, that now we're quoting for a third time today, the halacha of Yochanan is that sometimes you can purchase an animal and it won't be exempt. For example, when the animal's a fetus. Or, as the Baam Tosfos points out over here, for example, you purchase the animal before it's 8 days old. right? Those are two examples where you could purchase an animal and it won't be exempt. So maybe the case here in point is where I purchased the animal before it was a before it was 8 days old.
And obviously that's what he gave her.
Right, what he gave her was an animal that was either a fetus or an animal that was before 8 days old. Okay. Now, good, we've cleared up that issue. The Gemara now wants to know, this is where the conversation is going to turn interesting. The Gemara now wants to know, why was the Braisa so complicated? Meaning, the Braisa was trying to make a point that such an animal is an Esnan, and so therefore it will be obligated in Maaser Behema. Now look, we already have the Zona bringing the carbon. Can't she be the one doing the Maaser Behema count? Right. Why did the Braisa go through the complicated scenario of where he gave her the animal for services rendered, she sold back the animal to him, and now he's counting it towards Maaser Behema? Can't the case have been simplified and streamlined? And just simply, services rendered, he gave her an animal, and now because the animal was either a fetus or before 8 days old, so she'll count it towards Maaser Behema. Why can't the case be that simple? Yeah, sure, she's obligated.
No,
I understand that, but another... Okay, so you want to give a simple Metzias answer. Okay, the Gemara is not going to give a Metzias answer. The Gemara is going to give... Listen to this. Great, great discussion. V'te'asrei ihi. So the Gemara says, so why isn't she doing the Maaser Behema? Right? Why did the Braisa have to go through the next step of her selling it back to the guy? The Gemara's answer, Bezonos Kusis, because she's not Jewish. Meaning, listen carefully to the answer. Meaning, for her, there'd be no mitzvah. The mitzvah of Maaser Behema is only for a Jew. This particular case in point is where she's not Jewish, and so therefore there's no mitzvah. Now, V'lukma Bezona Yisraelis V'te'asra Ihi. But that only begs the next question. So why did you make the case where she wasn't Jewish? Why didn't you make the case where she is Jewish and then just simply let her do Maaser Behema herself? And listen to this answer. Because Zona Yisraelis does not give the animal status of Esnan. Meaning, a Jewish prostitute does not invoke the Esnan status of an animal. If you have a non-Jewish prostitute, so the Esnan would be prohibited. And if a Kohen has relations with her, he's not going to get Malkus Mishum Lo Yichalo Zaro. Because although she is a Zona, but she's not the Zona that the Torah prohibits to a Kohen. Kohen is not allowed to engage in relations with a zona. The Torah says, Isha grusha, I had a brain lock. Isha zona v'chalal lo yikachu. Yeah, isha zona v'chalal lo yikachu. Right, a Kohen's not allowed to marry a zona. Zona, non-Jewish zona, that's not what the Torah prohibits. Zona Yisraelis, however, if the Zona Yisraelis Esnana Mutter, her Esnan would be Mutter. Conversely, Kohen Abala Aloka Mishum Lo Yichalo Zaro. If Kohen has relations with her, that's the Zona that the Torah prohibits. Now, Zona Kusis Esnana Asur. Now, why is that? Meaning, let's not focus on Kohen and Zona. Let's just focus on status of Esnan. Why is it that only a non-Jewish Zona gives an animal status of Esnan? Gamar to'eva to'eva me'arayos. It's a limud. And we learn it out through the to'eva to'eva. The Torah describes an Esnan Zona being a to'eva. The Torah describes an act of erva, illicit relations, as an act of arayos. Ma'arayos de'lo tafsi be'u kedushe, avzona b'hach de'lo tafsi ba kedushe. And so therefore, what is the criteria that you need to meet in order for the animal to be an Esnan, to be given status of Esnan? The woman in question has to be a woman where there's no Tfisas Kedushin. If she's a Jewish prostitute, interestingly enough, you could be Mekadisha. I don't know if we'd recommend it, but you could be Mekadosher. She's subject to Kedushin. So therefore, her and if there was services rendered and there was a payment exchange for that services, and that payment was an animal, that animal does not have the status of Esnan. It's only regarding a woman who is Enotafsi Ba Kedushin, because of the Arayas, Arayas Gzera Shava, only for her now, the animal exchanged for services rendered, that animal has status of Esnan. And as far as why it is a Kohen who has relations with her is not subject to Malkus, because lo yichal zaro. The Torah's prohibition of not to have relations with a zona is a result of the fact that the children that are going to be produced are going to be halalim. But if he has relations with a non-Jewish prostitute, the child that comes out is not going to be a halal, it's not going to be Jewish. So it's eno chilo zaro. So therefore, there's no formal lav, right? We could speak in terms of muster about it, but in terms of just halacha, there's no formal lav for such an action. So we come back now. We have to be talking about where the zona was a non-Jewish zona, because otherwise the animal will never get the status of esnan. The only reason why we're having a discussion of esnan is because she was not Jewish. Okay, more to discuss about this, but we'll have to stop right now. But the Gemara subscribes. The Gemara is subscribing.